another day, another dollar makes you wonder where your money went. You can scream.
Hi, this is Jack Spierka. Welcome to another edition of the Survival Podcast. This is our first edition post-4th of July. We just celebrated the independence of our nation. And like many of you, I am concerned about where our independence is headed and how much independence we have left and how little independence we may have left very, very soon as things continue to slide in the direction of less freedom, more government control, and honestly, straining our resources. And today's podcast isn't going to be politics. It's not going to go in depth in any of these things, really. It's just going to talk about one of the things that you can do. And it's kind of a headache hedge against that. And we're going to go into a little bit about gardening today. We've done a podcast in the past about saving seeds. That podcast, I guess, would go well with this because we're going to talk about three particular types of plants that are very good for seed savers to use and very prolific and very nutritious. And I've titled this podcast The Three Sisters Garden and subtitled it The Original Survival Garden. And I've done that for a reason. You see, I think what many people don't realize when they think about, you know, Native Americans before the white man came and kind of screwed everything up by, well, killing them, stealing their land, taking their resources, killing off the things that they lived on, forcing them on a reservation, you know, that whole deal. Before that all happened, I don't think people realize the size and scope of the civilization that was here, how many people there really were. There were hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of Native Americans prior to the arrival of the white man. And some people even say that there were white men that came many, many years before we're officially taught about this, back in the Viking days. And that before that, there were many millions of Native Americans, both Native North and South Americans, and that we actually decimated those populations long before we came here and did it willfully, simply by exposing them to disease that they had never been exposed to. We didn't even know what we had done, and that's definitely a possibility. But either way, what's important to understand is that one time in the North American continent, there were hundreds of thousands or millions of Native Americans with little communities all over the place. And I think we get a misconception that these guys went out and hunted and fished, and that was where the majority of their food came from. These people from the northeast to the southeast to the southwest to the northwest and all in between were very heavily agricultural. And in the areas that weren't exactly rich with buffalo, you know, everything outside that center breadbasket of the state, game wasn't as plentiful, I think, as we may have led ourselves to believe. There was a lot of fish in the rivers at certain times of the year in different areas and whatnot, but, you know, you didn't just go out and kill a deer every day. It wasn't like that. The plains of America weren't quite like the plains of Africa, especially in the forests and the woodlands. And if you think about the hunting equipment these guys had, most of it was just bow and arrows and spears and atladles. And, you know, you can only get so much killing done with that. It's not the most efficient method to take game. So they had to rely on agriculture, and they had to rely on agriculture that was capable of producing complete nutrition if they didn't happen to put meat in the pot, so to speak, on any given day. And one of the big things that kept them alive, that was the original survival garden, was what's called the Three Sisters Garden. And if you've never heard of this before, and I've heard of it, and recently this weekend I actually watched a little show about it and decided I had to put one of these together. It's kind of late in the year, but with Texas' long growing season, I'm going to go ahead and try to get one off the ground this year just for experiment, and I'm going to be really in earnest with several of them next year. And all this is the combination of corn, beans, and squash in a single plot of land. They're normally grown in a kind of a circular pattern with a mound. I don't think it's necessary to really restrict yourself to that. You could use raised beds. There's many different types of planting media. But what the natives would do is they would go ahead and they would pile up these mounds. These mounds are around 8 feet in diameter. And I'm going to give you the basic planting specifications right now for a Three Sisters Garden. You start with your corn. You plant your corn first. And it's because you want your corn to kind of get off the ground and get growing upward. And it's going to give your beans basically a natural trellis so you want to give it a head start. So you plant in a circle about 7 to 8 corn kernels in a circle, spacing them about 6 inches apart. So you make this circle of corn. And you wait a week or two until your corn has started to grow and it's maybe a couple inches high. And then outside of your corn, you plant maybe 12 to 14 beans, some type of pole bean. They could be a shell bean, they could be a string bean, they could be any type of a bean. But the big thing you want is pole beans. And pole beans are the ones that kind of climb and grow up. They don't just grow in a bush. And you're going to plant about 12 to 14 of those about 6 inches outside of your corn. So you just make a bigger circle out of your beans. Give your beans a while to at least sprout. Then go ahead and plant your squash. You're going to want to plant about 6 to 7 squash plants about 12 to 15 inches outside of your beans. Now, as your squash starts to grow, you kind of guide your vines and head it inward so that it fills and covers the ground all around your beans and all around your corn. Now, by the time that happens, your corn's a couple feet high, and your beans are starting to wrap around your corn, and maybe you help the beans out initially and do a little hand wrapping of your beans around your corn. Eventually, what you end up with is this nice high 6 foot or taller corn stalks in the center. All these pole beans growing up around them, and then the squash is growing all around on the ground, and it's holding the moisture in so that it uses less water. Now, that's really cool, but what's even more cool is the natural fertilization that's going on here. What most people don't realize about corn is it's very, very nitrogen dependent. It needs a lot of nitrogen, a lot more than most crops. And it's a crop that a lot of homesteaders and individuals that are doing like small-scale homesteading kind of shy away from corn if they learn anything about it, because they realize, hey, man, it's going to take a lot of resources to produce a little bit of food. When you think about it, a great big corn stalk produces 2 ears of corn. 2 ears of corn, I sit down and eat that at one sitting myself. I try not to, but I certainly can, especially a good, fresh, sweet corn. So you can't produce a ton of it. If you do produce too much of it, you know, it doesn't really store the greatest if you want to keep it fresh. And it's very resource intensive. Well, this method of gardening will bring corn back to the home garden in a real cool way. Because what you're doing is you're planting these beans with your corn. Beans are a legume, and legumes nitrify soil, and what I mean by that is they actually pull nitrogen right out of the air. Remember, our atmosphere is almost 80%, it's like 78% nitrogen, just in the air that you're breathing. But the plants can't get the nitrogen from the air, but beans can. So beans pull the nitrogen out of the air, they actually create little nodules of nitrogen on the root system that goes into the ground. And when you harvest your beans, you cut the plants off and leave the roots in the ground. And then when you're ready to replant that mound, you work the soil and you leave the nitrogen there. And then the next crop of corn has nitrogen from the beans. Now, I don't know if the Native Americans even had a word for nitrogen, but they knew that these two plants together grew much better than they did apart, and that a smaller piece of land could produce more. So now I'm not giving up this plot of land for a bunch of corn. I'm just growing some corn in it, and I'm still producing just as much as I would be able to produce if I just grew whole beans, and probably just as much squash as if I had just grown squash. So the corn then becomes an additional part of the matrix. Now, from a survival standpoint, the brilliance of this garden is when you take squash, corn, and beans and combine them together. You get a proper combination of carbohydrates, proteins, and even fat if you eat some of the seeds from the starch, and the beans have some natural fats as well. So what you end up doing is you create a survival diet from a single plot of land. And if you plant multiple plots, you can actually put in quite a bit of production. And maybe you've heard of a Three Sisters Garden before. And now I'm going to talk about some ways, though, that maybe even if you've heard of or thought of doing this before, that we can maybe enhance this process and make it a little bit cooler, and make it a little bit more fun, and make it more productive. One of the first things that you can start to see here is that since these are planted in mounds, you can stage out your production. Okay, and what I mean by that is you can start one bed as early as you possibly can in the year without endangering your corn of freezing, right? And 2 weeks later, when you're planting your beans in that mound, you can be planting your corn in the next mound. You might run that cycle for a 6 week or an 8 week period, depending on the length of your growing season. So you can have different clumps, different mounds that are spread out across your property coming to production and coming to edible status, so to speak, at different times with different varieties of beans, different varieties of corn, and different varieties of squash. The other thing you can do, this is a seed saver's dreamless garden. All three of these plants, squash, corn, and beans are very easy to save seeds and replant. And if you're worried about cross-pollination, simply by separating your mounds to a large degree, and maybe you plant one on each corner of your property. If you have a small lot, you put one in your northeast, northwest, southeast, and southwest corner, and you have some planting in between them, you're not going to get a lot of cross-pollination. And then you just make sure you stick to single varieties in each group. Now, those four can produce quite a bit of food for you. And if maybe you make them a little bit bigger, maybe you can make your clumps basically four circles kind of together in one big giant square. So you could, with a little bit of effort and a little bit of planning and a little bit of staging, produce food that lasts throughout almost your entire growing season in a very complete nutritionally balanced way, with food that also has great storage capacity. And before I go into storage capacity, what I'm going to actually do is go into like some of the different options. So I think a lot of people, when they think of Three Sisters Garden, they think, well, I grow some Indian corn if I want something pretty, or I just take some sweet corn and throw it in the ground and plant some beans, some shell beans up there, some kind of bean that grows up a pole and like that I'll shell out and they can store, and I can plant some acorn squash or something like that, or pumpkins in there, and I'll have what I have and that's it. But there's a lot of variety that you can undertake. So let's kind of go through each one of these, and just, I don't want to try to give you like every option that you have. I just want to give you some options that maybe people don't typically consider to get your head going as to what you can do, because you should plant what you like and what you want to eat. And I think we should experiment with colors and flavors and textures of these different plants as well, and figure out things that maybe we didn't know we liked and ways to combine them. So let's start just with beans. Again, you want pole beans. Let me give you a couple varieties of beans that I've grown either at, you know, recently or in the past that are kind of cool and different that maybe don't get utilized much. One variety of bean is called asparagus yard long. And I've never seen one grow quite a yard long, and if you let them get too long, they tend to kind of get a little bit tough anyway. But if you let these things get about 12 to 18 inches in length before you pick them, you get a heck of a lot of bean out of one. I mean, these are just long, very cool beans. They're used in a lot of oriental dishes. They're very, very sweet, very, very tender, and they grow like crazy. And if you plant them in the north or you plant them in the south, they're going to grow and they're going to produce for you. They produce quickly, and they just seem to do well no matter what you do or don't do right. These things grow like crazy. Another one is called scarlet. Scarlet beans or scarlet pole bean. If you Google those, you'll find different sources of them. These are just pretty much a green bean. It's a pretty good green bean that you can eat as a snap bean, which means eat the whole bean, the pod, and everything. But what's cool about them is if you let them fully mature, they actually become a pretty good shell bean, which means if you let them get full to where you open them up, you take the beans out, kind of like little lima beans is what they look like. And they're great like that as well. And, of course, they're going to store a lot better for you like that. So you can kind of, you know, do two different harvests with these scarlet beans. The one thing I'll caution you about, though, they're a northern bean. So if you live in the south, this is something you're going to want to plant either right at the edge of the frost, coming out of the frost, or to where you're going to be harvesting right, you're almost risking your beans. They do not do well in really hot environments, so that's one consideration for them. You can grow them in the south. Again, though, you just have to think you don't want these things, at their height in July. It's going to be very, very bad for them. But the scarlet part, well, it's not a scarlet bean, it's a scarlet flower. These things, when they blossom, are just a beautiful red flower, so it adds beauty to your garden, and it gives you this other thing. Then, I want you to think about, there's these pole beans, I'm just going to call them purple beans. There's a ton of different varieties, but these beans, they taste like a green bean, with maybe a little bit more sweetness, but they're purple, and they add color to your cooking, and they're really cool. If you start to think about, kind of staging out several different mounds and doing this, and having purple beans and green beans and these different squash varieties all added together, you get some really colorful cooking that takes you from summer into fall, and it's really cool. There's a European bean called Quintus that I really like. They're a good pole shell bean. These are a bean that you're not going to be eating pods. You are going to be opening them up, take the beans out. It's called Quintus again, K-W-I-N-T-S. It's a European variety bean, so it's not something our Native Americans were growing. It's a great, highly reliable bean that does well in just about any climate. When you just want straight up green beans, I have two favorites. They're both Kentucky varieties. One is called Kentucky Blue, and the other is called Kentucky Wonder. If you just want really good quality green beans, you really can't go wrong with either one. So those are some different bean varieties to think about that you can combine and use and maybe stage out at different planting intervals. Now remember, if you want to save seeds and you're planting two different varieties, if they're open air pollinated, that's great, but you got to make sure you keep some separation between these different varieties. Let's move into squash. Because I think when people think about a Indian Three Sisters garden, they tend to think when they think of squash, they think of pumpkins. There's nothing wrong with pumpkins. I think a lot of Americans have lost their way on how to use and how to get the most use out of a pumpkin. Pumpkins aren't just a pumpkin pie and jack-o'-lanterns. If you cut and cube up pumpkin, especially certain varieties of food pumpkin, it's a very sweet, nutty squash, and it's very, very good when you combine it and cook it with corn and those spiced beans together, and that's the original succotash. You know, succotash we've come to accept is lima beans and corn. And that's not really what, succotash is really all about. It's kind of a bland, canned thing. But you make fresh succotash in your garden, you're going to want a lot of these mounds staged out for different harvest intervals because it's really cool. But, pumpkin is an option, and it's a winter squash. It stores well. The Indians certainly have consumed a great deal of these things. But there's other options. I mean, people tend to really, in this country, enjoy the summer squashes. The yellows and the zucchinis. There's no reason you can't grow yellow, whether it be a straight neck or crooked neck, and zucchini crooked neck or straight neck squashes in your Three Sisters garden. They do very well there. They don't tend to vine the way that winter squashes do, which actually makes them a little easier to control in that environment. They grow very large, big leaves. They provide the shade. They give everything to the Three Sisters arrangement that a winter squash does. Their only exception is that they don't store as well, so they're not a great storage product, but they are very good and they're a fast producer. And if you're planting and staging and you plant your summer squashes early, a lot of times you'll even have the opportunity in climates with long growing seasons to come in and plant a winter squash behind them after you've kind of let them run their course. So those are, one thing to think about. And, they've got the yellow and the zucchini, but there's also a type of squash that people refer to as patty pan squash. These are these little scallop-looking squashes, and they're pretty cool, too, and they give some variety, and they're something different, and they're available in both yellow and green varieties. And if you Google patty pan squash, you can find sources of seeds for these things. Moving into the winter squash, there's a lot of winter squashes out there, and I think a lot of people, again, are just not familiar with how to use them. What I recommend as part of selecting your squash variety is maybe go out to the supermarket and pick up a butternut squash and go home with a recipe and try it and see if you can find a way that you enjoy it. Before you go out planting these things, do it with an acorn squash or do it with a spaghetti squash. And learn different ways to prepare these different squashes, and you'll start to get more creative then with how you're gardening and using them in your garden. We'll kind of go through some of these, though. Butternut squashes, these things look kind of like a gourd almost. They're kind of long-necked, and they kind of big round on the bottom, like kind of like a weird mutated giant pear shape. And these are very nutty. They're something that's very good cubed up and made into succotash. They're almost perfect for it. I have seen people make pies out of them. They're not generally considered the greatest pie squash out there, though. But they are a great squash, and you can harvest them when they're smaller. If you just want smaller portions available or larger, in either way, they store very, very well. There's a squash called a Hubbard, which generally has like a blue skinned, bluish green skin to it. These are very good. They're very similar to an acorn squash. Again, they're a good nutty squash. They're good cut in half and baked and stuffed with other foods. They're good also in kind of, the good traditional succotash. There's acorn squashes, which are, the green, look like a big giant acorn. These were grown very heavily by Native American peoples, and they are an excellent, excellent winter squash to include in your Three Sisters garden. Spaghetti squash is, again, something that, people see it on the internet, they see a picture of it, they see it on film, and they think this looks really good. My advice is, and I happen to like spaghetti squash, but please go buy one before you plant them. Please go try it, make sure it's something you're going to like, learn how to cook it, and then decide if it's something you want. And, of course, there's the pumpkin, and there's some traditional pumpkins and big jack-o'-lantern pumpkins, and maybe you plant one of your mounds with a big pumpkin, it's really just for Halloween because it's kind of fun and cool. But if you want food pumpkins, there's various varieties. You can do some research on that. And generally, the smaller pumpkins make better food variety pumpkins. And then there's various specialty squashes. There's two I'll mention now, but you can find out about other squashes, again, with Google as your friend. One is called Lakota, and you might not be surprised to realize this is a very heavily grown squash by our native peoples. It's kind of like an acorn squash, but it stores even better. It's got a nutty, very sweet taste. It's an excellent, it's a beautiful, beautiful plant and a beautiful, beautiful squash. It looks like an Indian blanket. It's something that really enhances any garden and enhances any food supply. And there's one called Boston Marl. And basically, this is a squash that tastes like pumpkin and makes some of the best pumpkin pies that are available out there today. So that's yet another, just start to think about the squash thing. What could this be, and how can you stage this, and how can you maybe intermix different types of squashes and stage out different harvests and have different goals from your harvest? And, that's going to move us on to corn. I'm not going to go real deep into corn because God knows corn can get boring unless I guess you're from Iowa and corn is your big thing because there's so much to know about corn. But I just want to talk about a couple different things that corn brings to the table, so to speak, and different options you have for your corn that maybe make a lot of sense. See, corn's very inexpensive even today. To go out and buy some corn on the cob at the market, you don't get the homegrown taste, you don't get the, no fertilizers and things like that that you don't want in your food. But corn really is pretty affordable. So to me it makes sense to maybe grow some types of corn that are not that easy to acquire at the market if you're providing corn for yourself. One of the corns I really like, and this is a hybrid, folks, this is not something you're going to be able to save, but I really like it. It tastes good, it's beautiful, and it's beautiful mixed with beans and squash and succotash. It's called Ruby Queen. And it's a red, ruby red corn. And what I love about this corn is you can harvest it when it's just perfectly at its peak. And it's a very, very sweet, almost like a enhanced sweet or sugar enhanced corn. And it's very, very sweet, very, very good. You let it go just a little bit longer, so I don't let it go too long where it gets too starchy, and you get that old world heirloom corn flavor, more earthy, a little less sweet corn flavor. So it's kind of a dual-purpose corn. And the beauty is by harvesting, a couple early and having them sweet and then a couple late, mixing them into some succotash, you get this diversity out of this corn. And in my garden this year, that's what I'm choosing to grow. Because it's a pretty early producer, so I think I'll be able to get the growing season to work for me here, even though I'm starting late. And then there's the various Indian corns. And a lot of these Indian corns are marketed as the decorative corns, ornamental corns. But what most people don't realize is if you harvest these things early, they are edible, and they're quite sweet, and they taste quite good. They just are not something you want to eat, generally speaking, off the cob anyway, once they've hardened, and you see them out in marketplaces and all. So you can use them for ornamentals, but I do want you to think about if you harvest them early while the corn kernels are still tender, they're also another beautiful thing to include in succotash and other autumn dishes. Let's just talk a little bit about the three main varieties of corn that are out there. There's the open pollinated varieties. If you want to save your seeds, that's what you want to use. They're also referred to as heirloom varieties. They usually require less fertilizer, and that's good. The problem is they get very starchy very fast. They go into almost a feed corn look almost overnight, so to speak. So you have to pick them at their peak and use them at their peak. And they don't tend to store very well if you want to keep them sweet. If you want to use them to make cornmeal or something like that, that shells well and it'll make cornmeal for you and you can use it for things like that, but it's not going to generally be a good corn to can or process. Then we have what we call sugary enhanced corns. These stay sweet for about a week on the vine, so you get a little more leeway with how long you leave them on the stalk before you actually harvest them, and they'll store a little bit better for you once harvested, especially if you keep them good and cold in a refrigerator, ice bath, etc. And then we have with our super sweet varieties. These are good to freeze, good to process. We're not going to talk about blanching, but if you're going to freeze your corn, you should blanch it. These are another great variety. One thing about super sweet varieties, you have got to plant them at least 30 feet away from other varieties of corn, even if you're not looking to do seed saving. And you're not going to save seeds with these anyway because these are hybrids, but they will ruin their flavor if they get cross-pollinated. So you have to be worrying about that. And if you think about it, again, if you're doing these mound gardens, these three sisters gardens, keeping that separation is really pretty easy to do. And what I want to do now is I want to kind of just sum up everything that we talked about today with some thoughts about how ingenious this garden really is. If you think about it, the biggest thing missing from the dietary requirements is fat here. I mean, if you're not aware of this, you have got to have fat in your diet. Of all the nutrients, there's three forms of nutrients coming. There's fat, carbohydrates, and protein. The quickest one of the three, if you take it away completely, that will kill you, is no fat. You can live without protein, you won't live well, but you can do it, you'll survive on fat carbohydrates. You can live without carbohydrates, no matter what the naysayers of the Atkins diets, etc. say. If you have no carbohydrate in your diet, you have protein and fat, you can survive. If you take away fat, you will die. So you need fat. There is some fat in the beans, a little bit, and there's some fat in the squash, a little bit, but the seeds of the squash, pumpkin seeds, squash seeds, and most squash seeds, other than the summer varieties, actually stay very well, and they're very good for snacking, and they provide essential oils and nutrition. So truly, this garden is a survival garden. And, you know, if you had 10 of these mounds out there, you could do quite well in providing a very large amount of food. Now, you might get bored with just squash, corn, and beans every day, but at least you would survive. And that's how this was used. And then if you augment it with other vegetables, you can do quite well. Now, I know when you sit there and you think about, well, six stalks of corn in a circle, six, seven stalks of corn, how much corn are you really producing there? Well, let's say you grow four mounds. It's quite a bit. A stalk produces, on average, two. Let's say we lose one stalk, we end up with a six-stalk average in our mounds. That's 24 stalks. That's 48 cobs of corn. That's quite a bit of corn to be eaten. It's not, you know, enough to survive on for the rest of your life or anything, but it is a good amount of corn. And if you think about it, it's 48 cobs of corn that you've basically created out of thin air. And what I mean by that is you've taken space that normally you just wouldn't allocate to a crop like corn. You've still managed to grow other things, and yet you produce corn out of it. There's also some experimentation that I think I want to do with some other ground cover crops for more diversity yet. I wonder how cucumbers would do. My fear with cucumbers is that they'll fall, and I really am not a gardening expert, so I don't know how balanced the ecosystem is with cukes and corn in the same place, if they get the same kind of cooperative relationship from a soil standpoint as squash and corn, but it does beg one to think. I definitely wouldn't try growing peppers in this environment. You're going to be adding nitrogen-based fertilizer. If you want to use organic, you can use organic. But you're going to have to put nitrogen into these gardens, folks, at least in their first year, because the beans can't produce it as fast as the corn needs it the first year. So you're going to want to make sure you use good nitrogen. And peppers, if you give them too much nitrogen, they grow really big and beautiful, but they don't produce very well. But one of the things that seems like an obvious addition that can be planted among the squash and toward the outside of this garden is different greens, different lettuces. The lettuces that you generally cut when they're young. You can plant a ton of lettuce on the outskirts of these gardens, and in your hot environments where the sun is really bad, beats down and kills these young lettuces. The shade, they'll grow wonderfully in that shade. So that's another thing that can be done. So if you start thinking about different things that you can add or substitute, different varieties, and again, staging the time. If you're planting four or six or ten of these mounds, staging them apart a couple, maybe even just a week apart, and having, you know, extended harvest from all these different varieties and types of plants. And if you think about the beans that you can produce a ton of beans in this type of environment, and a bunch of squash. I mean, one or two zucchini plants, one or two yellow squash plants produce a lot of squash to a point where you start giving it away. And I'll share another tip I picked up from Mother Earth News with you on zucchini. And I've always gotten to a point where I'm like trying to throw zucchinis at people because they just produce like crazy. I picked up this tip. This is cool. You take your zucchini and you slice it about an eighth of an inch thick. You let them get about a foot long. Nice, big, healthy zucchinis. slice them about an eighth of an inch thick and just dry them out. You can dry them in the sun, you can dry them in a 100 to 110 degree oven, whatever you have, but dry them until they're crisp. And they're then good for use in stews and things like that in the wintertime to add flavor and texture and variety. But the person that posted the tip said you can eat them right out of the jar like potato chips, and they're just wonderful. And that even the varieties of zucchini that are kind of bland in taste, they're more just the texture and vitamin provider. You know, they don't have a lot of flavor. That when you dry them, a lot of the flavor gets intensified. So if you use like a really good flavorful zucchini, you're going to get even more flavor. This sounds pretty cool to me. It's definitely something I'm going to try to get produced out of my garden. I'll let you know how that works out. But again, remember, this is a podcast that's about helping you become more self-sufficient, more sustainable, better able to utilize the resources that you have and to make do with what comes your way, and to live a better life if times get tough or even if they don't. And I truly believe that Three Sisters Gardening can be a key part of that. I'm looking forward to my efforts with them this year, even though they're getting there a bit late. And I encourage you to do the same. And if you've had any experience with Three Sisters Gardens, or you like this podcast, if you have any additional questions, make sure to go to survivalpodcast.com, look up this episode, and post a comment for me, and whatever it is, we'll get back to you, and we'll either answer your question or incorporate your ideas. Thanks a lot. Hope you have a great day.
You can scream, and you can holler, it really doesn't matter, 'cause it all gets spent.